Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Baseball Tonight. Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney is back Monday through Friday. Be sure to check out his episode with Dr. Anthony Fauci on the feasibility of having a full baseball season and what he would tell players about being vaccinated. Buster also speaks to World Series winning manager Dave Roberts and his counterpart in the other dugout, Rays manager Kevin Cash. That's the Baseball Tonight podcast. Download and subscribe to Baseball Tonight and The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, Stephen A's World streams weekdays on ESPN Plus, bringing fans Stephen A. Smith's entertaining perspective and deep expertise with signature guests. The best interviews from Stephen A's World are now available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN Plus. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bobani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Got a great interview for you now. Joining me live from Houston, Texas, with lots of children in the background. Be sure to check out his track, Wake Up Everybody. It's Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes cover from my man, Tobe and Wigway. You see, I got it right this time. Dude, man, what's going on with you?
Houston turning into Nigeria. You know what I'm saying? We survived it. We lost power. I never thought I'd need a generator in the city of Houston. But you know what I'm saying? It's 2021. Climate change is real. You know what I'm saying? If I didn't believe it before.
Dude, this is the thing, right? Because I grew up in Houston. You are from Houston. And I was trying to explain to somebody, hey, man, I never saw temperatures like that ever before. I never saw anything like lower than 30. Y'all were down 100%. There in the teens.
Oh, bro. I'm talking about we didn't know how to act. Pipes was busting all over the place, man. I never in my life thought I had to keep my faucets running. And I thought it was just like you keep one running. They was like, nah, all of them. I was like, oh, okay, my bad. I ain't used to it.
I thought it was just one, too. I didn't think you had to do it for all of them.
Yeah, no doubt, man.
Nah, man, it's been wild. And like, you know, I've been talking to people about this, that it was power, gas, and water. And you hope that you had two, right? Like for people who had two of them, they were doing all right, you know? But it seems like from what you were telling me, the water is the thing that people are still struggling with.
We lost our power. We lost our water. We had to take a couple bucket baths. You know what I'm saying? I ain't mad at it. You know what I'm saying? I've done way more when I had to visit the village in Nigeria. So, you know what I'm saying? It's nothing like going to fetch your water. I learned I could take a whole shower with low-key a liter on the low.
Yo, this is one of the things I was thinking about is like rolling blackouts and stuff like that. And a lot of the world is just life. Like we forget that electricity is a finite resource, right? Like it's not like you just hit a switch and magically everybody has access to electricity, right? Like it is a limited amount of it. And it really hit me. Like that's one of those things where in this country, we can count on there being electricity, right? Generally, we can count on there being water, provided you pay your bill.
This is another thing that people forget. Yo, you can't call nobody. Ain't nobody really got landlines like that no more. But even if you did, you can't call nobody because the towers are out. So I didn't even get to talk to my main man for like 3 days. I had to drive by like 30 minutes away, and the gas stations all of a sudden became the club. Everybody was just posted outside the gas station because there's no heat. So people getting heat from their cars. I had to drive by to just make sure he was straight. It was real wild out here for a minute.
Now, I love having you on here. It's the second time that we have had you on. And as I think about it, like outside of like, you know, our circle of people that we have as guests, I think you are the first person that we have had on for a second appearance as a guest. And so my man, Combat Jack, rest in peace. I used to do an interview with him like every year that would just kind of be a check-in, right? Because he started with me early and we come and check in. And it's interesting now because I feel like I'm in that place with you, right? Like every time I see you or talk to you, it's a little bit different. The first time I did the interview, you were just getting it going. Then the next time I saw you was at the Soho House right after you had met Steve Stout. So this is before you had even worked out the deal with United Masters. And then I saw you backstage at your last show that you did in New York, and now we are here. And so, like, do you feel famous yet? Like, I'm really curious about that.
Hey, look, I ain't gonna lie. I don't know about necessarily fame, but I do feel way more financially. I'll tell you that much. When I first met you, I was like right above, bro. The consistency that we've shown throughout, you know what I'm saying, the time period since we last spoke, man. I just did a Black History performance with Erykah Badu that released yesterday. So, man, I'm with way more famous people now. Even if I ain't the famous one, I'm around. I got famous company now.
Yeah, see, I feel like you get the occasional thing that happens to me from time to time where, you know, you get spotted, like as you get started, you get spotted here and there, and it gets to be a little bit of a different thing and people recognize you. And yeah. Then you go somewhere with famous people asking you to be the one to take the picture, right? Oh, like you used to pose it and they're like, hey man, can you take this picture of me and your, and your man right fast?
No doubt. And I'm still second tier because they'll see me, but I'll be with Fat and they'll be like, oh yeah, yeah, you mind if I get this picture with, you know what I'm saying, Fat real quick. I'm just like, wow. Hey, tell me exactly what Fat do for you.
If people don't know, Fat is your wife. So that happens though, right? This is just kind of the change up. How comfortable are you with it? Because one thing that's interesting for me to watch about you is so much of your life is documented, right? There's so many cameras around at various points. How are you with that now as more people are recognizing you as a result?
I'm real good because like what I do as far as my art concerned and as far as the business is concerned is still who I am as a person. So I don't have to like switch up and be somebody different. Like, you know, people got like stage names and stuff like that, but I'm literally Toby when I do the music, when I do social media or whatever, and I'm Toby on the stage and I'm Toby in real life. So I don't have to like become something else for people. So it don't drain me like that. And we don't really be out like that. We don't really be places like that. And if I do go out, like I'm already prepared. Bun B gave me some real good advice one time. He was like, look, if you ain't ready to like be around nobody or like be who you are in front of people in real life, then just don't go outside because that's what they want. They expecting the voice that Bomani Jones got. I don't want to hear you come and talk different. Like, hey man, sound like you do on TV when you doing all your stuff. Sound like you do when you talking to Fat or when you talking to Nell or something like that. So I'm prepared for when I go out and we really don't go out like that much. And I'm 100% myself all the time.
Yeah, let me tell people the coolest thing that Toby managed to line up, right? Right? Like, this is it. So I went to the show, me and my man Charles Peach from worked with me on High Noon. We went to the show, and y'all hit me and were like, hey, man, we got this thing going on at the Polo store tomorrow. You ought to fall through. I said, okay, cool. So it's like the Polo bar. Like, I didn't even know that, like, there's the Polo store, but there was, like, there's the Polo bar. So we went, and it was cool. It was like a question and answer thing that you would do it. And I just sat there and thought to myself, you have lined up the Houston dream. You got the plug for the Polo.
Yeah, right?
Like, I'm looking at you. Fat had the Polo on. You had the Polo on. Retire at this moment right now. Y'all got the Polo plug.
Polo down, Polo socks to my drawers. You feel me? Yeah, man. It was a beautiful thing, man. That was a phenomenal time, too, man. Just chilling with the people.
Yeah, man. I was just like, oh, okay. Y'all pulled this off. Like, that was just my thought when I was in there. I was just like, what do I have to do to get the Polo plug? I should have stuck with this rapid. Like, this is what I should have done.
Yeah, no doubt, man. It was phenomenal, bro.
Yeah, man. How the babies doing?
The babies are phenomenal. Fat literally feeding them in the background right now. That's why you hear all that. When the food slow down, that's when they turn up. So she got so she feeding both of them right now. Yeah. It's going down. The babies are beautiful though.
Nah, man, I need to come back kick with Ivory. We developed a rapport. You know
come
what I'm
on.
Saying?
Come on, man. She waiting for Uncle Bomani.
Yeah, man. So the cover, the Wake Up Everybody, what made you decide that you wanted to do that?
I'll be honest with you. So out of all the, for lack of better terms, old school songs I listened to, I love that song the most. And they gave me another song that was a phenomenal song to do. But I was like, yo, if I do it, I really want to do the song that I'd be listening to on a regular basis. So I chose this song because I'm extremely fond of the way Teddy P turn up at the end of the song. Because Teddy P always start off nice and smooth and be like, oh, man, this is real sweet. Then at the end, he get crazy on him. Wake up! Oh, he just start going in on people. And I used to always love that part. So it was just an honor to be a part of it. And then, you know, they got on the project, they also got a whole bunch of famous people like Freddie Gibbs, who's nominated for a Grammy this year, and then Brent Faiyaz, and then Tinashe. Right, I was just like, yo, it's an honor to be a part of it.
Now, you talk about Teddy getting turned up on that song. Me and my boys lying forever. Don't push us.
Come on.
Pushing that dope.
Oh,
okay, got you. Like, Teddy saw I don't need to be clever about that. Don't use it. Stop using the dope. He was at his end, right? Just like, I don't know what else to tell y'all. Stop pushing that dope.
Don't push up. Nah, just go straight to him, man. So, yeah, I love it, bro. I love the fact that he was that bold.
Well, was it intimidating to try to sing a Teddy Pendergrass song, right? Because, like, singing is not your number one.
I promise you. Most of the arrangements that I came up with wasn't because I was like, man, let me try to do something different and sweet right here. It's because I don't have the range that Teddy P got. I'm like, yo, we're going to have to scale all that back. All that back to something real soft, and I can't really rise up like that. I beat it, my whole voice then cracked in two.
Now, this is a Black History Month project that ESPN The Undefeated were doing with a lot of covers of songs that are like of a similar vein, you know, from back in the day. And so the thing, I think it was a perfect fit for you because, like, the way that you put it is you say that your music is you making purpose popular. Like, that's always been a direction that you have gone in the music that you are doing. And I think we've talked about this before, but for the people who aren't as familiar with your work as I am, was that intentional in the beginning, or is that just what you realized as you were going was just going to be your lane?
I think both. It definitely was intentional. Like, so unlike most other artists, I got into this for a specific reason. I didn't just start doing music like on some like, yo, I just really want to express myself. I have a musical talent. It wasn't nothing like that. I was like, I have an agenda. I want to give people who come from where I come from, who really ain't had people around to give them game, I want to be a voice. Because I feel like if I had somebody to give me game when I was younger, I would have made the adjustments and done stuff different way sooner. So that's something that I carry really heavy on, just trying to get back to people where I come from. So the music that I do ain't specifically for everybody. I do it specifically for that group of people, and anybody else who get it outside of that, it's just extra. I definitely knew what I was doing before I got in and got involved. And, you know what I'm saying? I've been pushing the same agenda.
Yeah, I feel like with purpose and the agenda that you talk about there, it helps that you got into this a little bit older, right? Like with a little more focus in like the way you saw the world.
Oh, bro, if I got in this young, I'd be, people be like, hey, you a liar. I'd be like, I know I am. If I got into this younger, I promise you I wouldn't be able to sustain. Bro, I was into so much wild stuff. I definitely had to be older to get in with this kind of message for sure.
But it also, not just for the message, but just kind of the way that you structure this. Because one thing I will never forget is you did a show at the Bowery Ballroom in New York. And then the next day is when I went and caught up with you at the Soho House. And I was just impressed by the quality of the show itself, like the lights, the setup. You had all your people opening and everything else. And then you got on and were ready, like as a live act. And I remember I asked you at the Soho House, I was like, cool. So, like, you know, who did you work with on putting the show together? And you were like, me.
Yeah.
And I just looked at you like, wait a minute. Like, so you ain't even been in this, and this whole stage show and everything else you came up with. And then I see you when you played Sony Hall at Times Square, and it's a whole nother show, right? It's turned all the way up. Like, the level of it had gone up. The budget had clearly gone up. And I'm still to this day blown away that so much of what you guys are doing is coming straight from y'all.
But this the thing, though, Bo. All of it ain't by choice. Some of it is by force. Just because I started this with absolutely no foreknowledge of the industry and no resources. So I had to learn how to be extremely resourceful. And just, like, being broke will really make you more creative than anything else in the world. And that's what happened with us. So I had to literally, like, study stuff on YouTube, the industry, just pay attention. I'll just use the street sense. I use the street sense, just pay attention to the industry. All right, what do I like? All right, what are they doing? All right, how are they doing it? How can I do this my way? And I just put the stuff together myself. This is one thing. I ain't never been lazy. You know, I played ball. I played football for the longest, and I learned a whole bunch of, like, perseverance, consistency. And I just apply that to what I'm doing now, and I'm able to learn stuff and not grow weary when it gets tough.
Yeah, let me tell you, you can be as resourceful as you want, but being able to do it is still another animal, right? Like, I've been broke. I wouldn't have been able to come up with no stage show when I was broke. like that was, like I say, it just, I could not, when you told me that, I simply could not believe it. I was just like, he's not lying. Like, I looked at it, I was like, I know this cat ain't lying. Like, there was no question about your honesty. I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, man, I've been blessed with, you know what I'm saying, just a certain amount of vision. I ain't gonna like, withhold what God then gave me. I got a certain amount of vision. I might not be the sweetest at everything, but I do have at least that part.
I always felt like an interesting thing about you from talking to you and everything else is that you are not in this necessarily like trying to go platinum per se, right? Like, this isn't about trying to be the biggest star in the world. Like you say, you got a lane of people, and those are the people that you're trying to reach. And so, like, at that last show I went to, I saw one of my homeboys there. I hadn't seen him in forever, and we just happened to be in the same section. And it was so funny. He came backstage with me to do with the long dreads. And he was like, dog, man, I be listening to Toby, and I'm like, man, I just got to get my life back, man. I got to treat my girl better. This dude is 40-something years old, right? Like, we're not talking about some young dude. This dude is 40-something years old, and he looked at it as such, like, an inspiring thing in terms of the music. And then I'm looking down at the crowd, and I'm seeing the people. I see how it goes. You bring the baby out and everything else. And the intimacy of the connection is as strong, if not stronger, than anything I've seen from people in this. Has that surprised you? Because I know that you've been very sincere and with what you're given of your life. But at the same time, it's got to be a little striking to see like how much so many people can connect to it.
I'll be honest with you. Nah, I didn't think it was going to reach as far as it does right now. I didn't know it'd be such a wide range of people. Like, I didn't know it'd be grown men coming up and giving me props. And I didn't have people shed tears. Like, but it'd be like from the babies. All the way to grown people. And I thought I was going to have my hood with me. I ain't going to lie.
I saw a woman in my section with her literal baby, like infant.
That's the type of stuff that be blowing my mind. I've seen middle-aged single white women with their kids. And I'm just like, yo, tell me specifically how what a dude from Southwest 80 Texas is saying. That's the stuff that be blowing my mind, because that's the type of stuff that I didn't imagine. I imagine like the whole G-Mob, the whole Southwest 80 Texas, like everybody I went to school with, I imagine they would be out there like front row going crazy, but I never imagined how it is now. It's a beautiful thing.
Now, it feels good when people get it, right? Like when you ask somebody what they're into and you're like, oh yeah, that is exactly what I was going for.
That's so crazy. It's crazy, bro.
Yeah, man. So musically, just in terms of like how you got here and like influences and the likes, like who's the person that you would point to and say, okay, this is probably the biggest influence on my music?
Ooh. The biggest influence on my music. Man, I listened to a lot of things growing up. My favorite, Lauryn Hill, Andre 3000, Biggie. I feel like nobody was a better rap skill to this day than the Notorious B.I.G. I just strongly feel like that. I feel like the way he flipped words, multiple syllable rhymes, all that type of like crap, you like never knew where he was going with the rhymes. Andre is the most creative at saying something. And I feel like Lauren was the coldest at saying something when she said something. Everything was always potent with her. But then I also have like all kind of like R&B influences. I listen to a lot of, you know what I'm saying? Old school, like Isley Brothers, Teddy P. I listened to Fela Kuti a lot growing up. I listened to a lot of Nigerian music. Sunday, I went there. Y'all know who that is. But you know what I'm saying? That's the type of stuff your parents make you listen to when you grow up in a Nigerian household on Sunday when it's time to clean.
Well, let me ask this Nigerian music question.
Come on.
All Night Long by Lionel Richie, y'all's jam? Because when we lived in Nigeria for that year, All Night Long was they.
Oh, jam. I promise you. You can get All Night Long literally at almost every single Nigerian party.
It was they jam.
In 2021, still, you could get All Night Long from Nigerians easily. No matter what kind of Nigerian either. Yoruba, Igbo, it don't matter.
Now, I noticed in the list of people that you talked about, you didn't really mention a lot of folks from Houston. And one thing I thought was interesting in hearing your music at first, I was like, this don't really sound like Houston. But then I realized I've been gone from Houston for a while and the sound of Houston has just gone all over the place. Cause like I was there when Screw first got jumping. And so that became the direction. Like UGK was there, but honestly, man, couldn't so many people even like dream of doing that, right? Like they couldn't even go in that direction. Like in your sound, where do you see the Houston in your sound?
Now, listen, you got to forgive me because most of the times I don't say a lot of Houston artists because only people from Houston really know who I'm talking about.
Right.
So if I say Big Hawk and Fat Pat, you're going to know exactly who I'm talking about. But on the grand scale of things, a lot of people in the world don't know what I'm talking about. But those are like Big Hawk was literally my favorite Houston rapper. I jammed Fat Pat, Kiki, Chamillionaire, and the Color Changing Clip, Paul Wall and them. Like when I was in high school, that was the lick. Lil Flip before the, you know what I'm saying, the incident happened where.
Yeah. Nothing was the same.
And nothing was the same. It hurt me so bad. But I, you know what I'm saying? I pulled with all the Houston legends, Slim Thug, ESG. I loved Houston music growing up.
Yeah, like the thing about Houston is, Houston, like there was that run in 04 where everybody got their national deals, you know, and put out an album. And then they went right back to Houston. Like it's hard to explain to people. Like, it used to be like Cali back in the day. You could go platinum in Cali and not sell a record anywhere else. In Houston, you could get it done just off people in Houston, right? Like, there's a world, there's always been like a self-contained universe of music, and we wasn't really tripping on whether anybody else was on it.
I promise you, there are millionaire Houston artists or people that make substantial funds not ever in their life leaving Texas. Baby Fat, come here. You're doing too much now. Come on, you're getting a little antsy. Come here. Now you about to be sit down. Come here.
Oh, you got the baby joining the proceedings.
Say hi to Uncle Bomani. Say hi. Wave.
Ooh. Fine then. Don't wave at me.
That's how you feel? Say hi. There you go.
There we go.
Give him a blow kiss. Mwah.
I was about to say, I feel like it's some concerts. You try to get us to tell her what's up, and it don't happen.
Oh, no, we way past that stage. Oh, she talking and moving and stuff now. Be quiet.
But no, Houston, like Slim Thug, you talk about that with Slim Thug. Slim Thug is my age, which I always have to forget. Remember, because he always feels, because he's been around for so long, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
he feels
yeah.
like he's so much. Slim Thug was filthy, stankin' rich in like 02.
Yeah, like a boss.
Yeah, 02. Slim Thug, like Slim Thug put the record out, he went national. Okay, cool. You'd be like, damn, what happened to Slim Thug? He's back in Houston being rich.
Just being, and this is what I love about Slim. He the most non-hatingest rapper I've ever seen in my life. Slim gonna show love to everybody, anybody who trying to do something that don't get you locked up. He be 100% for it and supporting all the time.
Man, look, I take it this far back with Slim Thug. I saw Slim Thug at Chocolate Town on the North Side in 97 and opening for him. I don't know if you even remember, this dude was Bust Down. Bust Down was this dude from New Orleans who had the song Nasty B.
Yeah.
and Bust Down was doing his set, and he was doing other songs, right? But we don't know none of your other songs,
yeah,
Bust
yeah,
Down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were literally throwing stuff at him until he played Nasty B, at which point everybody was like, oh, yeah, that's my jam.
I don't know this dude until he played one song that you know. Like, oh, okay, I fool with him now. Yeah,
yes. And it just turned all the way around. But, dude, that was 1997. Like, we almost 25 years away from that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, the longevity that Slim didn't have in the game is crazy.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this about, like, the music that you guys are making. Because in the beginning, right, as good as the stuff was, it was still kind of clear in listening that, like, y'all were doing this yourselves and trying to get it figured out, you know, trying to figure out how you were doing it. So, like, what's been the evolution of the process for you? Because it's so self-contained what you're doing. It's you, your wife, and Nell, by and large.
100%. I would say we've just evolved more so into, like, our specific style and sound. And that don't particularly mean rap or R&B or just soul. I think it'd be all of it combined. And in any given time, we could go either way. And because we've been so consistent, people are locking in with us whatever way we go. And they know whatever way we go, we're still being true to ourselves. That's why people, I think, fool with us so much.
Yeah, because I was just like, again, with like the stage show and like you putting this all together, you need, like, there's a level of input that you kind of need to take it where you're going. And it could be hard to figure out that balance, right? Or like, what's that been like, the balance between doing what you want to do while also understanding the ideas that other people have that can make what you do better?
At one point, I was trying to like delegate stuff and bring people in to try to, you know what I'm saying, like increase the vision and all that type of stuff. But I'm at a place now where there's so much of it that specifically has to come from my mind that I don't want to hit nobody up to do nothing specifically unless I literally can't do it. Like, I design all the stuff. I do all the set design. I write all my stuff. Me and Nell sit in there, do the production. It literally just be us. It's really self-contained. And I've learned just throughout doing this that it really don't take a lot of people. Like, maybe when you're trying to shoot some like Jimmy Kimmel performances and stuff, you're going to need sound. You're going to need all that type of stuff that I can't do. So I bring in people for sound and all that other type of stuff. But as far as a lot of the creative stuff, you know, a lot of it specifically has to come from my mind because I'm very, very particular and I know exactly how I want to be represented in whatever it is that we're doing. I'm not going to leave that up to anybody to just, you know what I'm saying? That type of stuff. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. But is it hard for you to let go on some of those things, like to be able to appreciate what somebody else might be able to bring in?
Hey, man, that's a phenomenal question. Sometimes it is. And I would say, all right, so I'll put it like this. If you have built credibility with me specifically in whatever area it is, it ain't hard for me to to relinquish like my mental capacity for it and just like, all right, cool. You could do that. But if we ain't built no rapport or nothing like that, I literally move by me and my homeboy got this little saying. But I operate under the concept of I don't know y'all. I don't know y'all like that. And I don't fool with people like that. I fool with my people. And we gonna have to build rapport before I can like lock in with you like that. Even on a professional level, because you know, because I be with my family and stuff all the time. So you gotta be a solid person to be moving with us.
No, I totally understand. Like this is, I started doing my stuff very similar to you, where I did everything. And then it just reached a point where it's like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Like otherwise I'll never be able to sleep. And that was like one of the hardest things for me to learn was how to let other people do stuff. You know, like that's why I was curious about it for you. Cause I know it's not easy when you got a very particular idea of what you want and how to know that somebody that might be able to present something that you didn't even know you wanted. Right. And then it's like, oh dad, good idea.
Exactly. I wouldn't have thought of that one. That's good. But I'll be like that. So that's all right. I'll be like, all right, that's good. I wouldn't have thought of that one. That's a plus one for you. You got nine more plus ones and then we're going to be good. I can push it off to you. I don't know why I'm like that, man. I got to stop.
No, trust me. At some point you will. At some point. No, and it's really just a matter of you're going to be doing so many different things that it just becomes literally impossible because time is a finite resource too. So it just gets to a point where you just can't, as many of the things that you want to do, somebody else has to do it. And just the hard part is finding people that you trust enough to go ahead and do it. And people you trust enough that if they get something wrong, you ain't just going to toss them out immediately.
Oh, man, I'm talking about expendable. bro. But this is the thing. I can say this, though. I have let the majority of stuff on the back end go. Like, I don't just be nose deep in emails and stuff like that no more at all. I think the babies help with that. The babies will help take that attention straight away from the emails and relieve all that pressure.
Well, that was the other thing I was thinking about, man. Like having kids and they're so integrated in what you're doing, but they're still kids, right? Like how is like just the workload of having kids just affected what you've been able to do? Because you seem to be able to put out content at the same rate.
I think kids is one thing, but like babies is a whole nother thing. I think babies have the highest rate of suicide attempts in the world. I think they try to kill themselves more than any other type of person in the world. So that the 90% of my time with the babies be trying to make sure they don't swallow screws or stick their hands in electric sockets or just eat random trash on the ground or just preventing suicide amongst my babies. Is my main thing. So I think once we can get them to an age where they like, yo, I don't want to die, and they understand the concept of life and like you can lose your life, we'll be able to do a lot more. But I think having the babies has made me plan ahead a little bit more, so I'm able to put stuff out and still be ultra black daddy over here. So you know what I'm saying?
Have you reached a point where you start thinking like that? Like my boy Shannon would always say that when I walk around the house with him and I see he'll put some up way up high, he's like, dog, you got to think like them. Otherwise,
I'm telling you,
be laid around.
Yo, you really do, man. You really have to think like them. All right, I don't put nothing on the edge of nothing. Whatever you put stuff like on a table or somewhere, you put it directly in the center where you know they can't. If they eat like they creative, they'll move their little toy car, start setting up stuff to climb up. I'm just like, yo, you got to think like, yeah, that dude's a genius.
That's all you absolutely have to think. This whole thing is that anything he does, he's like, so if a 2-year-old saw this, what would a 2-year-old think?
Oh, 100%. And you have to understand that they're not on your team. Oh, I promise you, they're not on your team. Like, I think, man, if I don't believe nothing else the Bible say, I believe like, yo, we all born in sin, shaped in iniquity. And you can see that in kids and babies. You like, yo. What will make you do something like that? Then you understand, all right, cool, they not with us. Yo, on the low, fact, I ain't gonna lie to you, I just had this epiphany. Loving kids, it's like literally loving your enemies. Like that's how you can learn to love your enemies, by loving your kids, because they not on your side at all. Even when they show you the love and stuff that you be like, oh man, they give you kisses. Like the moment you tell them something, they don't, you can see like what side of the fence they on, and it's not your side ever, ever. Try to feed them green beans. You'll see where they stand.
So where are you going next with all this, man? Like, what is the next program for you?
Oh, man, I promise you, consistency is key. I don't even think that far ahead. I just think, all right, like, how can we be consistent? We got more music coming. We're working on, I got famous friends now. So we're working on stuff with a couple of famous people. I might do some, Fat, I'm trying to see, how much can I say, Fat?
Hold on. No, we got something for that. Gabe, play the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Dang, man, that's a lot, man. So here's one thing I also think is interesting, man. You seem to still be really enjoying it, right? Because I know a lot of this can get stressful and hard, but you seem to really still be enjoying it.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love the fact that I told somebody the other day, man, yo, bro, I never in my life saw my life going like this. Like, I wake up and feel like I'm living a dream every single day. I get to be with my people all the time and just do what I love to do in service to the people.
Yeah, now I mentioned, you know, Combat Jack's check-ins with me. And one thing he would check in with me on, you kind of alluded to this, but he would always look at me every now and then and be like, so how's the money? And this is, but I think it's a hard thing to explain to people who have not experienced that. Like, when you're doing the stuff that you really enjoy doing, and then you look up one day and you're like, yo, my money is straight. And then you, after the money is straight day, you're like, wait a minute, my money is good?
Yeah, yeah. And then my money is great. And then my money is phenomenal. But this is the thing. So I'm at the place right now where, like, yo, my money is phenomenal, but my life, my relationship is phenomenal with my wife. My relationship with my kids is phenomenal. I don't have, like, no tension, like, no negative energy, except for my mom telling me that I need to find the plumber to come to the crib. And I'm just like, yo, all the plumbers need to fix their pipes in Houston first. You know what I'm saying? So that's my only tension right now, is my mom putting the pressure on me to get make sure the plumber come to the crib.
So has it really landed with your parents yet, like what you got going? Because this is like, it's hard enough to explain to your parents generally when you do this, but parents that are not from the United States is a different animal. Mind,
if I could explain to you just how it's landed with my parents, it's so 180 to when I was broke and they was telling me, Toby, when will you go and get that job? It's so different from that now. Now my mom calls me with stuff like, wow, let me give it to you. Oh, let me tell you how the expectation changed. It was like that before. Like, when would you go get a job? So now when the snowstorm hit Houston, now it's, Toby, I need you to call the plumber. I need you to, the pipes bust. I'm like, all right, cool. The plumbers are down right now. The whole city is down. When the city come back up, I'm going to get you right. But go ahead. This is what I want you to do. I want you to go ahead and find a hotel so I can put you up in a hotel so you don't have to be at the house. She said, wow. So, Toby, you're telling me that my famous son wants me to find my own hotel? Wow. I said, wow. I said, wow, praise God. Like, yo, my success has literally crippled your ability to even look. I'm talking about even look. Oh, man. That blew my mind. So you're saying that I said, she said, Toby, please don't make me get on the YouTubes and find Erica Badu and tell her what you're. I said, what? Mom, that's not even how you do that. That's not even how you do that. But so, yeah. So it's a complete 180, man. So my success has definitely resonated with my Nigerian parents in all aspects of their life. We took the kids over there. Watch this. We took the kids over there to see their grandparents. And while we was leaving, and he ain't gonna mind. Hopefully he don't listen to this podcast. My dad said, we came outside, my dad said, yeah, so Toby, you know, I like Lincoln Navigator. I said, yo, what? Yo, what? I'm like, daddy, what does that got to do with me? He said, you know, while you're just moving around, I just wanted you to be thinking that your father likes Lincoln Navigator. I said, yeah, daddy. All right, I remember that, daddy. I said, hey, daddy, do me a favor. Don't do that to nobody else, though. Hey, yeah. Please, don't do that.
Please understand, these are not the first Nigerians I have met before. I am not terribly surprised by this development.
Bro, yeah. So my success has completely resonated with them. Oh, They understand.
I love she hit you with my famous son. You're like, wait a minute. I didn't know you thought I was famous.
Oh, wow. It's a beautiful thing, bro.
No, that's like, I remember I saw an interview Bun B did many years ago with John Caramonica, and he was talking about like convincing his parents that he was, you know, the music thing was working. And they said, well, why don't I hear you on the radio? And he's like, well, they don't really play records from the South. And his mama was like, James Brown's from the South. They play his music on the radio, right? And it's like those kinds of things you can't explain. But when it start rolling, magically people seem to get it.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, and my parents are an extreme example of that.
Man, are they wearing the merchandise? Like, are they around? Like, I found out my daddy used to wear around the horror t-shirts to the barbershop. I was like, oh, he proud.
Oh, yeah. My mom definitely has all the hoodies, posters, pictures. She's even taken some of the fan art from the crib to literally put it up at her house. You know what I'm saying?
Let me tell you what you don't know. You don't know how many times in random conversations that you coming up now in a way that you did not. It's just, you know, do you know who my son is? They just had like, yeah, you know, my son raps. Maybe you've heard of him. Have you heard of him? Maybe you've heard of him.
Oh, man. My mom loved it. And this is the thing. Some of the stuff she don't even catch. A lot of the stuff her friends be hitting her and telling her, oh, Vicky, I saw your son with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I didn't know your son was this big. Wow. Can you imagine? I'm just like, she said, hey, somebody, I have a presidential son. Can you imagine? I'm just like, yeah.
Well, that's because their friends been popping off when y'all went around. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, okay. Right. Now everybody got to come be homies.
I'm talking about every single first generation born Nigerian and American knows that our parents, for some reason, they love competing with each other and it don't got nothing to do with us. On our behalf, though. They want to compete with each other on our behalf. Well, you know that so-and-so's son is doing, he has gotten accepted into Harvard. Why are you still at a local school? I'm just like, wow, what they got to do with me?
No, but I imagine for you especially, because for people who don't know, Nigerians roll deep in Houston. Like, it's a very strong Nigerian population. So it's got to be like an added level of being at the crib with that, because it's not just that you're putting on for the city, but you're also putting on for a particular group of people.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I feel like Houston is the hub for the most Nigerians in the nation. I ain't gonna lie to you.
It might be.
Yeah. I know it's a lot. It's a some Nigerians out there in the D.C. area and some in Atlanta. Like, it's a heavy population in those two areas. But I know Houston for sure is the mecca of Nigerians in the U.S. for sure. And we all know each other.
Yeah, well, that's the most interesting part, is that every single one of y'all know each other. Like, my man Master Tesfashion, he is from Eritrea, and he grew up in Dallas. And he's like, yo, all the Eritreans and Ethiopians in Dallas know each other, right? That's just kind of how it goes. In spite of, like, but they ain't as many of them as it is of y'all.
No. We way deeper than them, 100%. No disrespect either. Oh, we just deep.
And y'all are, I think I told you this before, a friend of mine, a Nigerian friend, said, think about Nigeria. She's like, Nigerians are the most exceptional people in the world. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that's a bad thing. Oh, but it's always exceptional.
100%. And they hang their hat on that. They hang their head on that for sure. I feel like we some of the proudest people you have ever. We proud of literally everything. It don't matter what it is. Did you see such and such? Oh yeah. We can never finish last. No, they carry last at anything. I'm like, that don't. This ain't even like a first or last type thing. Doesn't matter. We're number one.
So when you go get your pops that gator though? Like, he ain't gonna forget about that gator. Just so you know, he is not gonna forget that gator.
And this is my thing. I have to do it. I gotta do it so discreet and subtly and so non-expected. Just I gotta find the balance. This is what I really want to do this, bro. I really gotta find the balance of, all right, what can I do and not do? Because they the type that, an inch, I'm talking about not even a mile. I'm 100 miles. 100 miles and running. You give them 1 inch, they 100 miles and running. So I gotta balance it out and just figure out when I'm gonna do it.
All right. I'm asking this one last thing, and I ask this in celebration, because I'm happy for you. Like, I know you for real. You know what I mean? What's the coolest thing you've been able to get for yourself or the family since the things changed a little bit?
The livest thing that I've been able to get for my people is getting nailed that Suburban. I ain't gonna lie to you, because I hated her and her husband's truck. He had this F-150 that he was driving since college. And I just hated it. I hated it. I was going to get him a new truck, but then I was like, nah, I don't even want to see a truck no more. They finna have a whole bunch of kids. Let me get him this Suburban. And I knew Nell had this whole thing where she was like, you know, I grew up driving Suburban. Blah, blah, blah. She used to always, you know what I'm saying, whatever.
Nah, that's it. We just talked about this a second ago. People, like, when people start talking about all the stereotypes about it, I'm like, nah, man, I'm from Houston. Everybody got a truck.
Everybody got a truck, especially if you bald.
Everybody's got a truck. I will never get a truck, though, because I ain't helping you move.
Hey, I ain't gonna lie. Now, that'd be the only plus for all my homies with a truck. Oh, bruh. I done hit at least three of them in the last week. 100%.
Yeah, and like it happens, like places where not everybody has a truck, you decide to get a truck, you did that to yourself. Because you are phone call number one. Hey, what you doing on the weekend of the first?
Yep. You're going to be busy. Don't worry. What about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? You know what I'm saying?
I just need a little help with something, man. That's all it is. Because they don't just need the truck. They need your arms after the truck has reached the destination to move this stuff.
Yeah. I need to get something for the garage real quick. You mind helping me?
Yeah, go ahead and get a hand truck. Go ahead and get all the tools that are necessary because you are going to be a part-time mover once you decide to get that truck. But look, man, this is my man, Toby and Wigway. Check him out, tobyandwigway.com, Toby and Wigway on Instagram. Again, dog, I'm so happy for you and seeing you and the way that you kick it and making this happen. Like, I am thrilled for you that you've been able to make this happen and do it the way that you wanted to, man. That is wild impressive, man.
Man, thank you, man. Thank you so much, man. Thank you for believing me when we was right above broke, man. You know what I'm saying? You fooled me back then. That's why I fool with you now.
Dog, I heard one track and I was like, oh, wait a minute. What's going on here?
And that's how I knew it was real. Cause I was like, yo, I don't know my man from any John Doe in the world. And it was like real love. So yeah. I'm forever indebted, man.
When I caught you at the Soho House, I was thinking like, yo, man, I want to see what I can do to help this dude. Then I got there and was like, oh, you don't need me. Cool. I can just sit back here. I can just sit back here and enjoy it. Got it. You are farther ahead of the game than I ever could have imagined at that point, man. And like dead serious. Like it wasn't like, fine, man, you don't need me. It was like, oh no, okay, they got this, they got something figured out here. I just want to watch to see how it goes.
Praise God, man, it's a blessing, bro.
It's going great places, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.